You know, Blood, Sweat, and Tears is a very interesting history, especially around the time when you had the hits, the Spinning Wheel and God Bless the Child and You Made Me So Very Happy. A lot of people don't remember there was a BS&T album prior to you being there, which I think was Al Kooper, and it was more of a bluesy type of a band, and was big on the rock stations, the underground rock stations, which was the scene I was in. And then all of a sudden, you're in the band. I think it was the second album, and it was a smash. And you had those big hits, and then there was, you know, another one after that, and there was the tour. How did you wind up in that situation to begin with? Just a bit of history.
Oh, you mean joining Blood, Sweat, and Tears?
Yeah. How did that happen?
Oh, I went to New York. I had been there several times. Went there, first of all, to do a television show in the, I think, 1964. We had a big hit in Canada, and went down and did a show with Paul Anka in New York. And I just loved it. I loved the energy of Greenwich Village, and I wanted to get back there. So with a number one record in Canada, I went back to New York. And, of course, a number one record in Canada meant absolutely nothing in New York. And at that time, it meant absolutely nothing in Canada either, because there was no music industry in Canada in the 1960s. And hung around New York, around Greenwich Village for about 2 years out of work. Working basket houses, and you know what a basket house is?
I was just going to ask you that. What is
it? Play a couple of tunes and pass the basket.
Ah, okay.
And that's how all these New York artists stayed alive. That's how we made a living. You know, James Taylor played basket houses. Carole King played basket houses. All the good writers of that time, and Jimi Hendrix included. And along the way, met a bunch of young musicians who were starting a band. And it ended up with me getting into Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
And so you went suddenly from basically being a broke, obscure musician to suddenly being an international superstar. Was that a difficult thing, a head trip, as we used to call it in those days, to go through? How'd you handle that?
Oh, it's absolutely crazy, of course. But, you know, you don't sit still long enough to think about it. You're usually running for an airplane or running for a gig.
I have a question that I always wanted to ask you and I've always wondered about. And I knew Bobby Colombi and I knew Steve Katz from Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and I knew you. Those were the three. And I knew your manager. Mm-hmm. I believe his name was Fred Heller. And there was a fellow that was the manager before, and I can't remember his name. But he
was... Larry Goldblatt.
Larry Goldblatt. Okay, yes. And... how did you guys feel about Chicago? Were they a competing band? Did you feel that they were inspired by the ground that you broke? And sometimes when you look back at them over the years, what are your thoughts?
Oh, they've done very well for themselves. But they have turned into basically a touring band, too. They've turned into what I left, which was a band that just stays on the road all the time. And I think there's only two or three of them left.
Yeah, they have a very, very small percentage. Yeah, they're more of a concept. They're more like the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. It's not the musicians. It's the
organization. Yeah, I mean, there's still a Blood, Sweat, and Tears out there on the road somewhere.
Is there really?
And there always will be. As long as the name is worth money, there'll be somebody to be Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Is that funny how that happens?
Let them stay on the road 200 days a year playing my music. It's okay. Better them than me.
Have you ever heard of a group from Russia called Leonid and Friends?
Oh, of course. I know them.
I met them
a couple of years ago in Moscow.
Did you really? You would be fantastic with them. I know that sounds crazy, but...
No, that's what they do. There's a band here in Toronto very much like them called Oakland Stroke, which is Lou Pomonti's band, and they play all the big hits, Earth, Wind, and Fire... BS&T, Chicago, Tower of Power, and they do them amazingly well.
Mm. Another incident that I want to share with you, I know you won't remember it, but there was a group back in the day called, the Ides of March.
Sure,
I'm your vehicle, baby. The guy sounded just like you. It was sort of to you and Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
I know. My mother called me and told me she heard my new record. I said, Mom, that's not me. And she, don't tell me I'm your mother.
So I'm driving in the car with you on Hollywood Boulevard. You had a little Mercedes convertible, and you were taking me out to show me around or something. I was from New York, where I was a DJ, and mm-hmm. I used to play Blood, Sweat, and Tears all the time, and that's how we met. And you were singing at the top of your lungs as we were driving down either Sunset Boulevard or Hollywood Boulevard from your house in the hills. You were singing Vehicle. And it was hilarious. And you sounded a lot better than the guy who
sang funny, it. The new the tribute band, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, is out there now. Plays Vehicle in their show.
Well, it's sort of like John McCafferty and the Beaver Brown Band when they came out with that
song. But you know, the record
Dark
business
Side.
Being what it is when one particular group hits, first of all, it can't get arrested because it's different than everybody else. And then when it starts to sell records, everybody else starts sounding like it. Mm-hmm. So in the wake of Blood, Sweat, and Tears in 1968, 69, there had to be 50 horn bands out there. You know, every time you turned around, there was another horn band. It was the marketing gimmick of the month, I guess. Yeah, horn
there was
band.
There was a huge Canadian band called Lighthouse, which I'm sure
absolutely.
You remember.
Absolutely. They were all over the world. There were British Blood, Sweat, and Tears. There was a Russian, mm-hmm. as you said, Leonid. There was a Russian Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah. And do you remember Genya Ravon or Genya Raven and 10-Wheel Drive?
Oh, sure. I know her well. I'm still in touch with her from time to time.
Oh, really? That's nice to hear that she's still around. You know, I've lost so much touch with that scene.
Yeah, she's not in the business anymore, but mm-hmm. she lives down in Atlanta.
I see. Yeah, she was quite an attraction with that band. They were a hot band.
10-Wheel Drive, yeah.
Yeah, 10-Wheel Drive, and they had that horn sound. But when you left BS&T and had your own solo career, a few years later they asked you back, or you came back, you worked out differences, and then you stayed with them for a while. They couldn't make it without you. At least that was my observation. I don't want to put you on the spot, but isn't that true?
I think we both learned something. I mean, I took a break from them because I was basically exhausted and burned out, mm-hmm. and I found out that it was very hard for me to work without using the Blood, Sweat, and Tears name, and it was very hard for them to work without my voice. So we, after about a year and a half, said, okay, enough of this foolishness, let's get back to work.
Mm-hmm. And then it went for a long time, but it wasn't quite the same.
40 years.
Wow. And when did that end? When did you actually stop being with a thing called Blood, Sweat, and Tears?
2004.
Okay.
You know, I had actually left a couple of years before, but there was all sorts of gigs that had to be played out, contracts that went for a couple of years in advance even. So, but I had made up my mind by the 2000s that I was done with it. There was nobody left but me. And it wasn't what it was.
It wasn't what it was because of the times, the material, or the actual musicianship?
No, because the fire had gone out of it. The creative spark was gone. They hadn't been in a recording studio in 30 years, and they had no interest in making new music. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens to a lot of artists, and it's happened in Chicago, and it's happened to just about everybody. Is that when you have a monster hit like that? That was the album of the year. It was the biggest selling album of the world, and 3 number one hits came off it in the same month. Then that's what the promoters out there want to buy. That's what the agents want to sell, and that's what the managers want you to do. And so basically, the money is playing spinning wheel for the rest of your life. Mm.
And, some people don't mind doing that, and others find it artistically to be maddening. You were somewhere in there?
Well, I have always managed to have a few side projects with Blood, Sweat, and Tears that kept my sanity. But, yeah, absolutely. If they forget what it was that made Blood, Sweat, and Tears in the first place, and it was a bunch of guys who were intensely creative, came up with a whole different idea of what a band should sound like and changed the music industry. And then the music industry moves on, and that's what you did. It's over. And so you make millions of dollars a year for the rest of your life being a touring act. And I did it. I did it for many, many years. Put my kids through school, They all got good college educations, and I lived well, and played some wonderful venues, toured all over the world, but it was time to leave.